Could we please have order in the room? We are going to proceed with Representative Howe's bill, which we started the other day and didn't really have time to finish it. It will be very brief, and then we will move on to other things. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Where would you like? Would you like me to start all over, or could we go to the amendment?
Let's go to the amendment, Representative. I will move again that House 3247 be brought before the committee and recommended to be included in the laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay.
Go ahead, Representative.
Madam Chair, would you want to move the amendment, or is that already moved?
That was moved, but I will move it again. I believe it's A3.
A2.
Why don't I have A2? Excuse me, it's A2. Yours is A2 and the other one's A3. Sorry. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, and then, Madam Chair, I have a verbal amendment for that amendment. I did talk to staff. I think they wrote it down yesterday, but I will repeat it. On line 1.6, delete its borders, then insert the city where the school is located, comma. No, I guess we don't need the comma. I could read the amendment the way it would be amended, if that helps.
Yes, read it as amendment, please, Representative.
Okay. It would be a school district that does not have a city with a local police department within the city where the school is located may levy the greater of the amount specified in paragraph A, or $25,000.
All right. And that puts it in the shape that the author would like to have it. So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The way my bill came to you, I think the fiscal note was $1.5 million. With the amendment as amended, we don't know exactly how much it will remove, but it will probably shrink it down 25% to 50%, and we'll know that later on. But I'm trying to focus on schools with large boundaries but no police protection, where they have to use another city or they have to use the county law enforcement agencies, and it's always more difficult and more expensive that way. That's my bill. I can stand for any questions.
Are there any questions for the representative? All right. Representative Bernardi.
Madam Chair, I have an amendment, but I don't remember him saying that he did. Did you do the one on the... Okay.
We did the A2 amendment. Representative Bernardi, did you have an amendment?
No. No, it's only if another one is offered.
All right. I do have another amendment here, but nobody has taken ownership of that. So therefore...
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, I believe, had an amendment, and I certainly wasn't opposed to it. If somebody wants to do it for him, whatever the Chair would like.
Actually, Representative Howes, I'm not sure whether Representative Demmer had decided to do it or not to do it, so I hesitate to do it in his absence. Does anybody else, if anybody else here knows? So we will move ahead, and if there are no questions on your bill, we will proceed to our next bill. Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you,
Howes. Thank you, members.
Sorry I wasn't quick enough yesterday.
And this bill will be laid over. All right, we are going to quickly do Representative Klinzing's bill. Is Representative Klinzing in the room? Hold on. Those of you who are testifying, Representative Klinzing is a member of the committee, but I don't see her. Is Anoka Hennepin here to report briefly on their pilot program? All right, we will wait on Representative Klinzing. And ladies and gentlemen of the committee, the reason that these folks are before us is last year we recognized the fact that the Anoka-Hennepin District has somewhat of a compensatory funding problem. And so what we did is we gave them money for a pilot program to be initiated in that district. And we just wanted to hear briefly what they're doing and where they're at with it. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Chair Sakura. You did a beautiful job of introducing why we're here today, so I will skip my introduction and move quickly to, first of all, saying thank you to this committee and to the legislature for acknowledging the compensatory aid issue that Anoka-Hennepin has. And we are very excited to be here today to give you an update as to how that pilot program is working in Anoka-Hennepin, so thank you for the opportunity. And right now I will introduce Dr. Roger Giroux, Superintendent for the Anoka-Hennepin School District.
Welcome, Dr. Giroux.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you, Representative Dietrich. I have with me, should we need them, Mr. Carlson, our Assistant Superintendent, and Donna Studer, Dr. Donna Studer, who is our Associate Superintendent for Instruction, Lori Rush, our Director of Curriculum. And I actually brought the budget man with, too, just to make sure that if a question was asked, we could answer them quickly. Madam Chair, we had prepared and distributed some copy. Hopefully all have a set of it. I'll just do this very quickly if I could. The first page of the list, the attachments for that copy, the first item under page one is the memo that we received from the State Department of Education initiating the grant. I do this only to document that there were stipulations in the law as to how this was to be done and that we've complied. When we move to the second page of that page two, we have the listing of the dates of activities through the implementation of the grant. Okay, so I wanted to make sure that we have the dates in place. In page three of that document, I included a copy of key messages that we have used for communicating the purpose of this grant to a host of audiences. Madam Chair, members of the committee, there's a lengthy presentation that we have that goes with this, but I wanted to at least get the summary into it.
Good. Summary would be wonderful.
Gotcha. Number four, Madam Chair, members of the committee, is the summary in single page of the essence of the grant, and that includes a very brief statement on evaluation, and I will tell you in a moment. I'll talk to that page with some others. Page five lists the budget of the grant as it applies to the schools that are involved. This is the page five is the listing of the expenditures by object, and page six is the listing of expenditures by school by object, so that there is an accountability for the dollars specific to the school. Madam Chair, if I may take just a moment to try and summarize the essence of what we're trying to do. We are grateful to the legislature for having made the opportunity available to us and to our children. It is our intent to deliver educational services in three of those pilot schools in accordance with the guidelines that we've been given. We are using what we think to be the most appropriate instructional techniques possible in delivering those services, and we fully expect achievement results because of those inputs. We are tracking the achievement results, making the use of the services of the Center for Applied Research at the University of Minnesota to do a good deal of that evaluation. We are using the center as well to help us in monitoring the application of those treatments, of those instructional programs to those specific children. We have it will vary a little bit based on enrollment dates, but 650 to 700 students actually participating in the receipt of the treatment. We are accounting for all of the dollars that go in. We are accounting for them in terms of what the instruction is that's being delivered and how it consumes time, how it consumes energy, what it does for professional development, what it requires for material. And we are tracking the involvement of the students with each of those programs so we can relate one to the other. Our purpose is to be as specific as we can in documenting that this grant has resulted in improved student achievement. But its also purpose is to make sure that we can demonstrate to this committee, to our own community, to our own representatives, Madam Chair, that this is that there is a cost-effective relationship between what you put in the classroom and instruction and what comes out, and that we can ultimately track to later grades cost savings because we were able to capture the learning needs of these kids and remediate at an earlier year, an earlier time. I truly wanted to make a statement, Madam Chair, at the beginning of this. I have others who can answer questions specific to instruction accountability. I've dealt with compensatory education for 35 years. I came into this business because when they dealt with the first federal monies for comp ed under Lyndon Johnson, someone decided they need to track where it was going and what they were doing with it, so they trained a bunch of us in masters and PhDs to do that kind of assessment and that kind of evaluation. And here I am 35 years later, and in many respects we are still struggling to get our arms around the kinds of things that drive those expenditures and those expected improvements and those expected achievements. I know that poverty is so much of a surrogate indicator of where the monies are needed and what has to be done, and that's a very important part of what we do. I don't want to deny that. But I also know that what drives the cost is the actual instruction that you need to get the child to learn. And as we try and struggle desperately to make sure we leave no child behind, we've got to know what the costs are. And we've got to know what the costs are related to the instruction we deliver in the classroom, and we've got to know what the relationship is to those different instructions to what we're seeing in achievement. Then we've got to quantify it. You gave us an opportunity to do several things. I suspect there are some in this state who could possibly do these better than we can, and I'll look to them, as will my colleagues, for the guidance and direction. But we truly think that that we're going to be able, when this is done, to have made something significant in helping to make sure that kids who come under the guise of this kind of funding to learn, that those achievements will happen, that we'll be able to do that. It's a critical issue, and we don't treat it lightly, and we are not leaving ourselves any leeway in making sure that you see what's being done with the money. Madam Chair, I have others here to answer questions and content and direction better than I can, but let me stand at that point. And
are there members with questions for Dr. Giroux? I do have one. I'm curious. I know that this money was just allocated last year, so you're just getting into the program.
Right.
Is there some kind of ongoing evaluation going on so that you can see whether or not you're getting progress, or is this something that we have to wait a year to learn more about?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it is a bit early, since we've got our feet running in September and October, and we're delivering services at this point. But even at this point, we've had interim evaluation results and reports on the implementation and the process and the effectiveness of instruction as best we can before we see the test results. Now, we have people who are actually in the buildings working with the staff and documenting those things as we go through. And yes, we do have some interim findings. I was not able to summarize that in brief order for today's discussion, and in some respects I think maybe you'll be grateful, but we will make that available to you if you wish under other copy. Yes, the University of Minnesota is with us continuously on this. In that
That's good to know that you have been involved. Are there any comments from the committee here? Any questions? We will see you again in the future with maybe, you know, looking for a little more data, but it looks like you've put together a good program.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will send that data well ahead of testimony so folks can see it. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Giroux.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Karen, how long will yours take? Right, we have one more quick bill, and then I think we'll be spending the rest of the time on the pension plan, and that is Representative Klensing's bill. So if Representative Klensing's people would please come forward.
Thank
and
you.
Grab a chair from the end there if you're short. Representative Klensing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to move House File 3151 to be before the committee. Recommended to move on and be referred to the Jobs and Economic Development Committee.
Thank you, Representative Klensing. Would you like to explain your bill, please?
Last year, I carried a bill to give Summit Academy, get some money appropriated to Summit Academy to use with their tutoring program in the high schools. And today, they're here to kind of report back on how that's going. And Representative Ellison was here last week with a bill to appropriate some more money to that tutoring program. And what this program is the jobs training program for which that tutoring program is a feeder. So I want Summit Academy to, at Lewis King, to really talk about what they do and why. and then you can ask any questions you might have from last week or this week about the program.
Mr. King, nice to see you again. Welcome to the committee.
Good to see you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Tenzing. First of all, thank you very much for supporting our efforts last year in ensuring that the kids get a good education in Minneapolis. I see some of my friends from an old life on the school board in Minneapolis sitting here today, and good to know that we have your support in ensuring that all children learn. Today we're here to discuss with you, and I brought along with me Mr. Victor Seals, a successful graduate of our vocational training program who is now a plumber. We're here to discuss with you a very successful program that we launched several years ago called the 100 Hard Hats program. And I've given you an information packet there for you to take a look at. Summit Academy plans to graduate and place 100 adults annually through its 100 Hard Hats program over the next 5 years. Our 100 Hard Hats program successfully trains and places students in high demand construction jobs. The average starting wage for graduates is $25,563. Summit is located in the Heritage Park neighborhood of North Minneapolis. Nearly 60% of the families residing in North Minneapolis have an income that is less than half of the metro median income. Many of our students also come from the Phillips neighborhood, where income levels indicate similar economic challenges. These neighborhoods have the highest levels of residents receiving some sort of social service public assistance and have the highest concentration of poverty. Less than half of the eligible workers in these communities are employed, compared to 84% citywide. At Summit, we believe that the best social service program in the world is a job. And toward that end, we focus on two areas: educating the children and ensuring that all adults work, not only so that they can earn money to take care of their families, so that they won't need welfare, but so that they can pay taxes and demonstrate a good example for their children. When I came to Minnesota in 1989, that was 17 years ago, I came for a 3-year tour as an Army officer. And my grandmother's still asking, when am I coming home back to Florida? She just can't get to how I'm surviving. Nevertheless, I spent a lot of time
up here. It's okay.
She won't buy it. I traveled from Chisago City to Lakeville, from Watertown to Woodbury. Back then, Woodbury seemed a long way out. Now, I'm neighbors with the representative here. But I found that the difference between the communities was that when you went up to Chisago and you talked to the kids from the farms, they understood a life that had to start early in the morning. They went to school and they came home and they helped again. When you went to the suburban schools, there was a life where the entire family got up in the morning, mom and dad drove to the Crystal City and dropped the child off at daycare, or they went to school, they came home at night, they had a meal together, and that was an established bedtime. When I got to the city, I found a community where kids lived in households where no one got up before 10 o'clock in the morning, and they did not work. The kids did not get to choose their parents, and therefore it is our responsibility, and we've taken it on to help them see a good example. We've been very successful with this particular program. The people who come through it are primarily African-American men who have been left out of the mainstream. They were poorly educated, resorted to lives of crime, and this opens up an opportunity for them to rebuild their lives, recapture their families, and also help build our communities. We've taken the last 3 years to partner with Dunwoody, and now we have offerings in plumbing, residential electrical, painting, and carpentry, and we have a very good success rate. In your package, you can see that 60% of our applicants actually graduate. When we first started, it was much lower than that. We had to work out some of us and figure out how to get guys through the system. Furthermore, our people are highly competitive. As a former officer, I don't believe in ever lowering standards. I think that you have to simply invest in people so that they rise to the challenge. Mr. Seals here finished in the top 3% of all plumbing applicants when he was trying to get into the union. So that's number 13 or 14 out of 486 applicants. So it's money well spent. We're asking you for your support because, first of all, it's good for Minnesota. The construction industry is graying. We have a structural housing shortage, and there will be big projects always built. We need a skilled workforce there to build those projects for us. We cannot export these jobs. We have to have Minnesotans who are capable of doing the work for us. We cannot import a workforce either to take charge of this for us. We want you to seriously consider making this investment. As you can see when you hear from Mr. Seals, these are people who are not asking for a handout. They fully will expect to step up to the plate and make a contribution. Victor.
Thank you very much, Mr. King. Mr. Seals, did you wish to speak?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members, Representative Clemson. My name is Victor Seals. I'm a former student at Summit Academy, OIC. I just want to give you a little background about myself. I came to Minnesota 3 years ago, almost 3 years to the date, actually, as a paroled prisoner from the state of Michigan after having served 15 years for an armed robbery I committed when I was 18. I spent my entire adult life incarcerated. I had absolutely no marketable skills, no job training, nothing when I came to the state of Minnesota. I had the clothes on my back, $15 in my pocket, and a bunch of big ideas. None of the ideas that I had seemed to be too practical, so you know, I had to step back and rethink some things. I stumbled upon Summit Academy doing some part-time work for somebody else, and the program interested me for two reasons. One, because I'm a real hands-on type of person. I like to work with my hands. And secondly, the length of the program was something I thought was manageable as far as the 20-week program for carpentry. And so I signed up. Not having any clue what the cost of the education was, not having any clue what would be the results of my education coming out of Summit Academy. There were several times during the course of that 20 weeks I thought that I would not be able to make it through the 20 weeks because I had to sacrifice some of my working hours to attend school. But the staff, Mr. King, and his excellent staff at Summit Academy, they made it possible for me to stay in school. They got me involved in the work-study program, which supplemented the already part-time income that I had. And they really, really just went above and beyond the call of duty to make it easy for me to stay in school, even allowing me in some instances to finish up projects after school. The first 10 weeks was carpentry. I wasn't interested in a carpentry program because I don't really like to work with wood. I went through it because it's a prerequisite to get into the plumbing program, which was at Dunwoody, and that was a fantastic part of the program. I was very surprised with what was offered as far as actual hands-on training. And furthermore, they even brought in someone from the Plumbers Union to kind of prepare us for what to expect if we were given the interview before the Joint Apprenticeship Committee. To jump ahead a little bit, because I don't want to belabor the point, when I graduated from Summit Academy, I just moved my fiance and children here from Michigan. Both her and I were working part-time jobs, living in a two-bedroom apartment, and we were not making ends meet. It had actually gotten to the point that we had went to apply for public assistance, and through that whole process, the running up and down the stairs from one department to another, I got frustrated. I left her to deal with it. And I went home and checked the mail. And this was after having taken the entrance union exam and after having gone before the Joint Apprenticeship Training Committee. When I got home, the mail, the first envelope that I picked up was a letter from the Joint Training Apprenticeship Committee. And when I opened it up, it said, "Congratulations, you've been accepted into the Local 15 Minneapolis Plumbers Union." And I broke a couple laws, I'm sure, getting back down to get my wife, because, I mean, I had never been more grateful to receive a letter in my life, and I told her to drop all of that application paperwork, we don't need it, because they told me I could start that following Monday, and I have been working full-time as a plumber ever since. As Lewis indicated, the starting wage for plumbers is excellent, but it gets better year by year. And, you know, as a result of that, I've been able to, I mean, literally go from having nothing to having a beautiful wife, two lovely children. We're in the home buying process right now. And, I mean, life has truly been, It's been a heck of a ride since I entered the doors of Summit Academy. I can't speak highly enough for the benefits of this program, and I've met so many people who, as a result of this program, have really just, even if they are not in the field that they got trained in, it changed their outlook on what they're capable of doing. I had no clue that I would enjoy this work as much as I do, but it's really making it possible for me to have a life for myself. So with that, that's all I have. Any questions for me, I'd be gladly to field it.
Are there committee members with questions? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. King. What do you feel is different about your program as to why you are having this?
Please speak into the mic, Representative.
Madam Chair, Mr. King, what do you feel is different about your program as to why you are having this degree of success?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Newman, we operate what I call a Trojan camp. We're really, first of all, our entrance criteria are what they are, and so only qualified people are allowed into the program. If you're not ready, we will help you get ready, and we don't lower standards. Secondly, when you're there, it is an immersion experience. You're expected to come to school every day, because if you can't show up to school, then how can we refer you to an employer? We have caring instructors who are journey-level carpenters or painters who essentially want to get away from the field and now want to teach the craft somewhere else to some other people. Another reason is our partnership with Dunwoody to focus on high standards, and certainly that brand is recognized across the country. We're committed to quality, and so are they. Our students recognize this challenge and really rise to the occasion. And we have some very caring people who get in there and mix it up with them. Finally, we pick what I call a bulletproof industry. There is going to be demand for these types of jobs for a long time, and we intend to be the best in the business in terms of producing people to help keep Minnesota strong.
Thank you very much, Mr. King.
Madam Chair, I'd like Mr. King to speak a little bit, too, to the program that Representative Ellison brought forward an appropriation request for last week, and that's the tutoring program at the high school, just to refresh people's memories, because that, when he says, Representative Newman, that they don't lower the standards of the entrance criteria, but they do help the students get ready. That's how they started running this tutoring program out of the high school. It's because they're trying to help these students get ready to meet the criteria that it takes to get into this great program.
Go ahead, Mr. King, briefly if possible. I'm sure that will help us remember.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, last year we asked for your support of the Quantum Opportunities Program. As a school board member, I was faced with the challenge of African-American kids not succeeding in the Minneapolis public schools, failing the basic skills test and dropping out. Therefore, they could not come to the workforce. They would either end up on welfare or in the penitentiary. We launched a program that is school-based and works in the afternoons after school to help kids bring up their test scores and learn how to perform as quality students. America is a test-taking country. Whether it's the ACT, the SAT, GMAT, GRE, we can teach people how to do that. And we can also teach them content, and the young people are rising to the occasion. Some of the challenges in the district are structural, and we need to address those. Tutoring programs are not enough. But for the most part, we're getting in there, mixing it up with them so they can grow up and enjoy the same benefits that Mr. Seals is.
That was a wonderful story, Mr. Seals, by the way.
Thank you.
Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. King, and thank you again for coming forth and Representative Clincy. We discussed this last week, and I'm wondering next year when Representative Dabney and I have been throwing ideas across, there used to be a funding mechanism for vocational education within our secondary system that's been pretty much cut out. And more than ever, it doesn't matter, we have the same problem in outstate Minnesota, where we have a shortage of people that are welders or auto mechanics or whatever, and it's not being introduced to them anymore. whether we need to start looking at our alternative schools that we have and making some requirements there to try to lead them into vocational school or whatnot all, but we need to get it back within our secondary level. And hopefully next year, if we get this going, that we can bring you back as a testifier on how exactly it works, and it does work.
Are there any further questions? Otherwise, Representative Klinzing, your bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to hear from you, and some of us hopefully will see you Friday morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we will now move on to the probably the main reason most of the people out here are here today. And I would ask both Representative Smith and Representative Osmond to come forward, please. What we have here are two bills. Both of them have pieces of, I guess, pieces that are needed to make the merger of TRA and the Minneapolis Teachers Fund whole, eventually. It will take time, but the way it's been worked out, it should work. And eventually they should be whole. It'll take quite a lot of time. I would like them to explain their bill and what is in each of those bills, and then we will try to get the pieces that are needed all together into one bill so that we can move the bill forward. If we can accomplish that today, the bill will move out of this committee. Representative Osmond, would you like to explain the major?
Yeah, sure.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could I just ask, which committee is this bill going to?
It moves to State Government Finance. Sorry. I should make the motion for both House File 2847 and 2367. Whichever one we end up putting all of these pieces together will be moved then to State Government Finance at the end of the day. And the other one will just be held over in this committee. Representative Osmond, you or Representative Smith, could you give us the basics of the two bills and kind of what's where? Could you do that?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As with most things around here, this is going to be a team effort. We are all members, the three of us at the table are members of the Pension Commission, and we have been working on trying to resolve some significant problems that we've had in past years, especially with the Minnesota Teachers Retirement Fund Association insufficiencies and the concerns that we have about its long-term health. And so this particular bill, 2847, along with provisions in Representative Smith's bill, are actually a proposal to merge the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund Association with the Teachers Retirement Association, and that we would be able to have the sufficient funds to be able to make this work. As you know, that the Minnesota prides itself on standing behind our pensions and our pensioners, and we don't want to have funds go defunct, and the longer that they are in potential threat, the more costly it gets as years go by. So for us to be able to have this opportunity where TRA is willing to step forward and to help us with this overall effort, I think is significant, and we should take advantage of it. Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Representative Thiessen if he would give a brief overview of the bill for committee members. He presented the bill for me when we were at the Government Operations Committee because of health problems that I'm having in my family. And so he is aware of some of the questions that came up at that committee hearing. And practice makes perfect, Madam Chair. I'd like to...
well, we certainly want a perfect presentation. So, Representative Thiessen, thank you very much. And we welcome you to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Briefly, what the bill does is it merges the Minneapolis Fund into the TRA. And there's two contributions. There's a couple ways that this is paid for because it is coming in with a liability. As you know, the Minneapolis Teachers Fund, as Representative Osmond mentioned, is in a bad funding situation.
Is it funded at what percent?
About 40%, I believe.
We're down to 40?
Somewhere in that range, yes. So what we have, which kind of, you know, it kind of makes the point of the crisis that we're in. Mm-hmm. It raises employee contribution rates by 0.5% as of June of this year. It raises employer contribution rates, so the school district's payment into the fund, by 0.5% as of June 30th or July 1st of next year, so in the next biennium. And then there's currently a sufficiency in the fund, so there's a little bit more in the fund than it's over a little bit over. It's about 101% funded, and it uses that sufficiency partly to pay for the.
I mean, you're talking about the combined
in the TRA fund, correct? Okay. The current TRA fund. What's left after the merger will be about exactly 100% funded. So we're not putting the TRA in any jeopardy. It's still fully funded. Just about, I mean, within a few, fractions of percentage points. What that money is used to do, and the other thing that pays for it is that all the money that's currently going to the Minneapolis Teachers Fund, which includes some state money, also includes about $4.5 million from the school district and the city of Minneapolis will be redirected to TRA, and one per year. And one other thing that's important to note in that regard is that in addition to what every other district in the state pays in terms of employer contribution, the city of Minneapolis currently and will continue to pay now to TRA a 3.64% above that every year. So there's about $12 to $14 million coming out of Minneapolis city taxpayers more than any other city or district in the state that's going to solve this problem. Okay, so we have the contribution increases. On the other side of the ledger, if you will, there is a multiplier increase of 0.2%. That's a benefit increase to teachers, and that's essentially being paid for by the 0.5% increase that the teachers are paying, plus a portion of their share of the sufficiency that's currently in the TRA. And that formula multiplier, we can get into the more details of that if people have questions about that. But that is an important benefit increase, not just for purposes of this bill, but for educational purposes, and that's one of the reasons we're here in front of you today. The other thing that is part of this bill that was added in government operations is that all school districts across the state are going to be held harmless because there's going to be a state aid appropriation to kind of offset the increase in employer contributions starting next year. So that 0.5% increase, which is in the range of $15 to $18 million a year, you know, if you take all the districts in the state, that's going to be picked up by a state appropriation of the district. And that's how we've always funded the employer share of the contributions to pensions. Basically, it's a state pass-through that runs through the districts and then goes to TRA. We're just continuing that model to make sure that our school districts are held harmless. And the full funding date so the date that it has to be fully funded is extended out to 2037, which is inconsistent with some of the other funds in the state. We have rolling averages of that length of time. So, but that gives us more time to catch up, so it helps with the funding. So that, I guess, is the kind of brief overview of the pieces of this bill.
Representative Thiessen, is the portion that you just described, which of the two bills is that in?
That is in, Madam Chair, it is in Representative Osmond's bill in the form I described it. It's in Representative Smith's bill, except for the piece that says about the state aid flowing that keep the school districts held harmless.
Right.
We made an amendment in GovOps on that.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Thiessen, does the extra funding from Minneapolis keep going until 2037, and does it end after that?
It goes until,
Representative.
Sorry, Madam Chair and Representative Greiling, it will run until 2037, yes. And I guess that's your answer, yes.
And so do the state dollars.
Right, Madam Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Representative Thiessen, I'm just trying to get at, does it stop after 2037?
You know, and Madam Chair, why don't we have when people come up here, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay,
so,
sorry.
Thank you.
We can get the answer for that, Madam Chair, if you'd like.
Sure, let's do that. Mr. Thompson, I see you. So we're going to nab you.
Oh,
Please introduce yourself for the record, and I'm sure that you will be kept to answer more than one question, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Luther Thompson, representing TRA, and also Lori Hacking, the Executive Director of TRA, is here if you have any questions for her. Yeah, the way this works, and I think you all have in your packet a little chart that looks like this. This is the funding plan for the unfunded liability. And that if the actuarial assumptions prove true, if the money, if these income streams are firm for the next 30 years, TRA will be fully funded in the year 2037. Then your normal cost would pay for the future costs after that date. So the additional supplemental contribution should go away in 2037. The state would be then would experience a windfall by not paying the additional $18 million plus the additional statutory supplemental they're paying now of about $16 million.
Is that answer your question, Representative Heidgar?
Yes, thank you. And I've got some concerns with the bill, and I need to explain it back home, so I'm going to ask some questions, okay? When you look at what we're attempting to do here, and I've met with Representative Thiessen, and it's something that I know was up a couple years ago, and Representative Haas had it on the floor, and I was able to get it pulled on the House floor, the study in itself, with a directive. But any actuary, I think if you take $989 million and you take it into anybody's investment portfolio, if you're sitting in a TRA right now, they're looking at 2.2, and in years to come, it's going to go up to 4.5. If we do this, will that slow up the process of those people presently in the TRA, but throwing this in there, is it going to be more difficult for this the TRA to get back to where they were paying four and a half a couple years ago?
Mr. Thompson.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think you're talking about the post fund. The post fund right now is we pay up to 2.5% in inflation component. For the foreseeable future, until the post fund is fully funded, we will pay no more than 2.5%. That is probably going to be at least one decade, possibly two decades into the future. In the post-retirement bill cap, that's Article 1 of the omnibus bill, we are recommending a cap be placed on that of 5%. The reason for that is that you need to get an IRS ruling as to whether that complies with current law. So as a practical matter, none of the current retirees for PARA, MSRS, or TRA will experience greater than 2.5% increases in the future. And if inflation is less than 2.5%, those increases will be whatever inflation is up to that point.
Mr. Thompson, no, we didn't really get to the part of the bill yet that explained the post-retirement fund. Would you like to do that, Representative Thiessen, before we continue with questions?
Madam Chair, I think there's really nothing. Well, there's one piece that deals with post fund. Maybe we can talk about that goes to Representative Heidegger's question,
okay.
And that is that this fund, with the merger, there's going to be a payment into the post fund that's going to keep the post fund exactly where it is right now. If that helps answer your question,
Mr. Thompson.
Madam Chair, yeah. In House File 2847, what will happen is all of the current retirees in Minneapolis will come into our post fund at the same funding ratio that currently exists for the three major post fund, for the three major funds. So they will be treated exactly like our retired teachers in the future and be subject to the 2.5%, up to 2.5% inflation and the cap when that is passed.
Madam Chair, I don't know. I think it depends on how you want to proceed. I mean, what Representative Osmond's bill is everything we've talked about. Representative
right.
Smith's bill has some other pieces, and I think it's up to you about how you want to.
Well, I think we should proceed and hear what the other pieces are, and then we can have questions that are fairly comprehensive on the whole the whole, because in my mind, if we don't have all these pieces, we don't have a fund that we're sure will be viable in the future. So we are looking to make sure we get all these pieces as part of a bill that goes out of here. Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, briefly, there are some differences between the two bills. First of all, the so-called Smith bill was introduced in April of 2005 and only has one author. The Osmond bill was introduced in March of this year and has a whole lot more authors. There are two articles, and if there are specific questions, I'm going to let Mr. Martin handle those. But there is a 5%, excuse me just one second, there's a 5% cap in Article 1 on Minnesota Post-Retirement Invest Fund post-retirement adjustments for members participating, public pension funds that participate in the Minnesota Post-Retirement Investment Fund. The other article dealing with deferred annuity augmentation rate change, under current law, a person is augmented by 3% until reaching age 55 and then 5% thereafter. This would flatten it out beginning in June of 2006, I think the bill says, which would need to be amended to a rate of 2.5% each year that it's deferred. So it has the cap and the augmentation rate change.
Right. Are there questions about that part? That is Mr. Smith's portion of this. And Representative Thiessen explained the rest of the bill. Are there questions about this portion of the bill? I don't believe you have no questions. This is very easily understood. Representative Heidgerfen.
Thank you. No, it's not very easily understood. Representative Smith, now you're talking about caps and you're talking about the age of 55, a concern that I have. Out of my district, I have a lot of retired Minneapolis school teachers moving in on our lakes out there. And I foresee this happening. Just picture this scenario. I'm sitting there and I may have taught over at the Upsala. And Representative Meslow over here taught in the metro area. So we're sitting in the lake and Representative Meslow will come up to me and say, thank you for the help, you know, with the TRA and the combining and everything else. What do you get? I see a check. What do you get the check for retirement? And we do some comparison. We find that Representative Meslow's check is based on a high five like it would be in Upsala. In Upsala, you may be retiring at with 30 years of experience with a plus 30 on a BS, and you're probably getting $40,000. That same teacher is teaching in the cities is probably getting $60,000. Now, when you do your high five, that person in the cities, even though they're living side by side, are getting a lot more money on a retirement check. Is that issue addressed in any way or any form on the high fives?
Representative Smith, do teachers pay in proportionate to what they make? So they are putting more money in all the time also?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think the answer is no, and I'm going to let Mr. Martin tell you why.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Larry Martin from the staff of the Pension Commission. The difference in someone's final salary is reflected during their entire career. So the contributions are made on whatever salary the teacher is actually paid. The obligation or the purpose for our public pension plans is to replace someone's standard of living. The standard of living is what they actually are paid when they're teaching. So if a teacher in Minneapolis is earning a higher salary, they're contributing on a higher salary during their entire working career, and we're replacing their standard of living, which is a higher salary. There are differentials throughout the state of Minnesota in what teachers are paid. That's something that maybe this committee may want to look at, since the state is the primary funder of teachers' salaries. The pension system is not attempting to adjust or to correct for differentials in salaries. Our purpose, the purpose of a public pension plan, is to replace the legitimate portion of someone's standard of living when they do choose to retire, and that's set by their compensation for the period immediately prior to retirement.
Representative Hyde.
Yes, I'm Chair, to that point, again, any time and that's been a problem with Minneapolis. Your high five, they'll drain it a lot quicker than if you're getting 60 than 40,000. There's still going to be that pressure on there, on even the combination. I was looking at the possibility of doing, and I know TRA ain't going to like this, but I was looking at doing a some kind of statewide average of high fives, and this is what you get, to make it equitable, at least when they retire, because no longer is that. I realize they get paid more in the cities than doing outstate, but after you retire, oftentimes they're not living where they taught anymore. And that's just a thought, and I'm glad that you did notice that there's some discrepancy there and some thought for, you know, possible language someplace along the line. It's just an issue that I know will come up in my district.
All right. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Thiessen. Before we get to the issue of how to do all of these computations that I have no interest in, would you first address why the state of Minnesota has a legal obligation to, in effect, bail out the Minneapolis Teachers Fund and merge it with TRA? That's first. Second, would you address the issue that you and I talked about in terms of the payouts? There is some concern that a few years ago the payouts were increasing in double digits, and I had some concern about, you know, why was that occurring. And I wonder if you just enlightened the committee on that issue. Those two questions.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Newman, and you know, feel free, Mr. Martin, as we go. But on the second question, what we had been talking about is there was a concern that during the 90s, because there were some high investment returns, there were some high payouts to Minneapolis teachers. And the Minneapolis Fund had a difference for some of their members. And I think it's important to note that since 79, coordinated members have had the same benefits in both plans. So everybody hired after 79 has had the same benefit plans. But of course, some of the teachers prior to 79, there was a little bit of differences in the formula, and there was some larger payouts for Minneapolis in the 90s. I think one of the things that it's important to remember is that it's the legislature that set those benefits and decided what those benefit payouts were going to be. And it's not so to the extent that the Minneapolis Pension Board was paying out high benefits. Higher benefit increases, that was because the legislature said this is the law and they were following the law. And my understanding is that they didn't have any discretion not to make those payments. Now, could the legislature have done something different? Could there have been a discussion here? Perhaps, but they had to follow the law. And so, in some sense, that's our responsibility. I think it's important, you know, generally speaking, the pension benefits, pension contribution rates, all those things are the creature of the legislature. And we decide what they are. And if they're different, that's because we've decided they're different. I mean, not us right here, obviously, but past legislatures. So that's the answer to your second question, I hope. That's the legal obligation. I think there's perhaps an open question. And this comes to the point when, if we don't do anything 5 to 10 years, there's not going to be money to pay out pensions to Minneapolis teachers. And that's kind of the reality. What's going to happen then? And is there a legal obligation that the state would step in? I think that there's probably, I don't know what a court would decide. There's clearly going to be litigation, and I think there's some good arguments. But a couple of points I'd make on that. First, the state of Minnesota was the employer of record for a 10-year period from the mid-70s to the mid-80s. And during that period of time, the unfunded liability in the fund grew from $76 million or thereabouts to about $260 million. So the state of Minnesota during that time was not paying in enough to cover to make up the difference or to cover the costs going out. So I think we have somewhat of a responsibility in that sense. And the funding ratio between those two dates, in 75 it was about 57%. That's like 40% today. It was about 50% in 75. It was 49% in 85 or 86 when the state turned it over again to the school district of Minneapolis. And the other point I guess I would make on that is, again, that the state sets the rules. And so in the end, we're the ones that, you know, the fund can make some decisions about what they invest in, and even there, in recent years, we've put in some rules about percentages of different types of investments in their portfolio. So the state does set up a lot of the rules about what that govern these funds. That's what I would offer up to you. I don't think there's a definitive answer on if a lawsuit happened, a judge would order the state of Minnesota to cover these costs. I think that there's a distinct possibility that could be at least part of the case, but that's as good as I can offer you. Maybe Mr. Martin has something more to offer on that. I don't know, on the legal obligation.
Mr. Martin?
Yes, Madam Chair, members. Minnesota's had a very limited experience with pension plans that have defaulted. The only pension plan that actually has a default in the state of Minnesota was TRA, the predecessor to TRA, in the 1930s. And at that point, retirees' benefits were cut in half, were not restored until 1957 to their full amount. That's how that was handled. In order to not have that happen in the mid-1950s, that's when the Pension Commission was set up, when PERA looked like it was about to default. So we have not had a situation where this has been litigated. So we don't really know how the courts are going to view the payment of the obligations of retired Minneapolis teachers should the Minneapolis Teacher Pension Fund go bankrupt. But one would logically assume that the first stop would be to look to the school district. The current obligation to our retired Minneapolis teachers is about $123 million per year in benefit payments. If there are no assets in the Minneapolis teacher plan, it will not take long for the Minneapolis school district to run out of money at the rate of $123 million per year. When the Minneapolis school district then becomes bankrupt, what happens? So I think if you look at the logical progression, the logic is that the state, whether it has a direct obligation to the Minneapolis teachers plan or not, does have an interest in making sure that public education continues in the city of Minneapolis, and is going to be obligated sooner or later to a smaller amount or a greater amount.
Is this a direct follow-up, Representative?
It's to the point,
to the point, Representative.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, when I see this, and I don't sit on the Pension Committee, and I haven't spent a whole lot of time with this, it's an issue that I think we came up yesterday, informed us that it's coming up to the committee. I said, well, I'll just kind of look at where we're at. And I'm still looking at it, and I realize that something has to be done, and I realize that. And I realize that things have been done in the past to help TRA as well. Okay, if this is what we got to do, we got to look at it. But yet, at the same time, I'm looking at it in a different perspective, and I'm trying to represent the retired teachers out in that are in the TRA program, and the present teachers are still teaching. I look at basically you're saying, well, we're going to go out and Minneapolis is going to throw $5 million in, and what we're going to do is charge the Minneapolis teachers a little bit more to get this thing going, and we realize that we need TRA to do it in the first place. Without TRA, we can't do it. But yet, at the same time, we're going to go out and we're going to ask the school districts and all the TRA districts to ante up a little bit more. We're going to ask all those teachers out there to ante up a little bit more for the next 30 years, and perhaps 30 years from now we'll probably get a little bit more. And at the same time, we're going to ask the state to make them whole. And who's the state? The state is also outstate Minnesota. So I'm just saying there's those messages that you do send. But yet at the same time, I do realize that we have to do something. Something has been done for TR before. But I still would like an easier spell of it would be that the fairness issue in the end. But I'm just some thoughts on it. And it's just, and I know that it's hard to explain that something has to be done, but...
Did you wish to respond, no. Representative Osman?
Very briefly, Madam Chair, just that the teachers outside of Minneapolis as of July of 2006, will get an additional benefit. That's where their additional contribution will go. Their additional contribution does not go to resolve the problems in Minneapolis. It is to try and give them an additional benefit.
Right. Representative Klinzing.
Thank you. This was a question about solvency of funds, essentially, and who is managing the funds when Minneapolis funds started to, the teachers' retirement started to become insolvent and continued into that? And what assurances do we have that in merging the two, that we're not going to have this happen to the merged retirement funds?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Mr. Mark.
The question is, who was responsible for running the invested assets of the Minneapolis Teachers Plan during the period? Minneapolis Teachers Plan, during much of its career, has had funding problems. I've had the opportunity to review the board minutes of the Minneapolis Teachers Plan in the 1940s when Hubert Humphrey was mayor of the city of Minneapolis and sat on the board, and they were having funding problems then. So this plan has had a history of some funding problems. The Minneapolis Teachers Board of Trustees has managed the fund since its creation in 1910. The merged plan would follow the TRA pattern. The invested assets would be managed by the State Board of Investment, which is the governor, the attorney general, the secretary of state, and the state auditor.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Representative Cleansing.
How does the management of the State Board of Investment versus the Minneapolis Board of Trustees differ? How do their rules and patterns of investing differ so greatly that we're so sure that we won't have a solvency issue when we merge everybody under the State Board of Investment?
Representative Osmond.
Madam Chair and Representative Cleansing, underneath the proposal before you, they would become merged, and they would be all managed underneath the bylaws of TRA. The Minneapolis pension gets merged into TRA and becomes TRA, a part of TRA,
Madam
not
Chair.
A separate entity.
Representative Cleansing.
I understand, Representative Osmond, but I guess my question is, what assurances do we have going into the next 30 years, states taking on quite a bit to pay for this, that this merged entity will stay solvent? How are things managed so much better in TRA? What's the difference there between how the unsolvent Minneapolis Board or Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund is managed?
Representative Thiessen, did you want to take
that? Let me see a couple. One kind of preliminary point is that the Minneapolis Fund has been about, kind of on average, about 1% below TRA in terms of returns over time. But what the SBI, I think the thing that gives me comfort is that the State Board of Investment, I think nationally, is recognized as one of the best pension fund managers across the country, and they're very well respected. And if we look at some of the other funds that they've had, their returns have actually been historically very good and well managed. And I think we have to look to the history of how they've managed funds in the past to kind of project how they'd be in the future. The other thing, it's a much bigger fund. And so, in terms of administrative costs and those kind of things, I think that could assist. I don't know if that gets at your question, but...
Does that answer your question, Representative Cleansing?
Close. Thank you.
Are there any further questions at the moment? Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In kind of part and parcel with Representative Cleansing's questions about the returns to the fund and how we can grow it and the earnings and administrative expenses you mentioned, there's also the part about the payout of the fund, and I'm curious about the cap that's being proposed, the 5%. Could somebody speak to that and maybe how that would be a piece of the puzzle in terms of making sure this is solvent going forward and that this is fixed, quote-unquote, once and for all? If that's a piece of that. I'm assuming a part is, but we haven't talked about that yet.
Representative Osmond.
Madam Chair and Representative, with regard to House File 2847, the cap is not part of that legislation. It is part of Representative Smith's legislation 2367, so they can, and they mentioned it or referred to it earlier, if you can answer the question.
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative.
Mr. Martin.
The cap on the post-retirement investment fund is separate, in a sense, from the Minneapolis Teachers Plan, the restructuring of our two teacher pension funds. But it relates to a broader problem. It's in the way that we do post-retirement increases for the statewide public pension plans. We provide currently increases based in part on the cost of living. That's the 2.5% maximum benefits increase per year based on the CPI increase, the Consumer Price Index increase. And the balance of any post-retirement increase is based on the investment performance of the plan without a cap. And so in very good investment years, such as the late 1990s and up to 2001 or thereabouts, benefit increases were very substantial at a time when there was relatively low inflation. We are now in a period still of relatively low inflation, but not very good investment performance, in part because we have the downturn. We're still recovering from the downturn that occurred around 2001. What the attempt of the 5% cap on post-retirement increases is to do is to moderate that period of very high increases followed by periods of no increase based on investment performance. If you provide less of an increase in any given year, you're more likely to have resources available to provide more recurring increases over a longer period of time. So it's a reform item or a restructuring item of pensions broadly, but does not specifically address Minneapolis teachers' plan problem. And to the extent that Representative Smith's bill has three items that are considered reform or reformulation and correction of the current situation, these are two of them. The third one is the change in deferred annuities augmentation. It's a practice that's followed in Minnesota where individuals who have enough service to have a right to an eventual pension benefit but who've left public service prior to reaching the age of drawing benefits get an increase in their benefit every year that they're deferred. We provide very large increases relative to everyone else right at the moment. This, for new hires, will moderate that rate of increase. That again will reduce the cost of the various public pension plans, make them somewhat more solvent in the future. And the three items are considered to be reforms that strengthen the financial health of the overall system. But the three could be dealt with independently. The Pension Commission opted to put these three items together in a single bill, and Representative Smith's bill was chosen as the carrier for that bill.
Representative Dimmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. We heard this, had a relatively comprehensive conversation, I'll say, about this in GovOps, and this issue was brought up, and there were some pretty interesting statistics that were shown, performance of the fund as it has been, as it's actually occurred, performance of the fund, hypothetically, if we'd have had the cap going way back, and of course, it was pointed out that the cap was very important going forward to make sure that the solvency is still there. It seems to me, in reference to Representative Thiessen's comment, that you know, we as a legislature and as a state kind of set the parameters upon which the increases are done. It seems to be very prudent that we as a committee look at making sure that that is in there so that long term this is there, so that we want to make sure that our teachers have their benefit when the time comes and we are dealing with this in another 10, 15, 20 years. So it seems to me, Madam Chair, that, you know, depending on how we come up with this bill, we need to have that in there from a fiduciary responsibility that maybe we have as a state. We're going to put the money in and look at its long term viability. That sounds like that would be pretty important. And I don't know how we get that done, Madam Chair, but I'll leave that to the committee.
Mr. Martin, actuarially, if we have the 5% cap, are we fairly well assured that this fund will not need another big fix? Because I don't think any of us want to do this again, and I doubt that any future reps, since many of us probably won't be here 10 or 15 years from now when there's another need, but I doubt any future reps are going to want to do that again either. So do you feel comfortable? Is this 5% going to do the trick? Having a cap, Is that going to make a difference? And also the change in management, because I realize the former management was not exactly fabulous. So would you comment on that, please, for the comfort level of members of this committee?
Madam Chair, I'm not an actuary by training, so I can't really tell you what actuarially this is all going to do. My background is as a lawyer. But what I can tell you is that the moderating impact of placing a cap on the post our retirement increases will make the payouts, will restructure the payouts so that they will be more moderate over time and will be more likely to be a sustainable rate of payment over time. Another large market downturn similar to 2001 can cause problems with pension systems no matter what the funding might have been prior to that downturn. So absent huge downturn similar to 2001 in the future, things would look promising. But there's always the caveat that no one knows the future and no one knows when substantial economic downturns might occur. That there would not be another need to restructure pension funds is also somewhat related to the economic downturn issue. We do have a small number of other local smaller pension funds. The St. Paul Teacher Pension Fund and the Duluth Teacher Pension Fund, for instance, are still freestanding plans which do take on new members, are governed by essentially the same law as the Minneapolis Teachers Plan. They are not as economically challenged as the Minneapolis Teachers Plan at the moment, but they're presumably one economic downturn away from being similarly.
They have no cap. They have no cap, so they would
sure
not.
They're similar.
So we could deal with the same thing for St. Paul and Duluth in the future?
Madam Chair, their economic circumstances could go south similar to the Minneapolis Teachers, yes.
It's pretty interesting. Is Mr. Bicker here from the State Board of Investments? Would you just like to comment on the actuarial? Go ahead.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Howard Bicker. I'm the Director of the State Investment Board. You know, I'm not a trained actuary either. I'm in the investment business. You know, as it relates to Minneapolis Teachers, I think the legislation that's being proposed will, at least from what I see, the numbers add up and the plan will be solvent. As to the 5% cap and some of the questions that have been asked before, you know, retired teachers in this bill will be held harmless. Assets from the Minneapolis teachers, and for that matter, the state teachers, will be put into the post-retirement fund so that the funding ratio, in other words, assets to liabilities, will not be harmed by the merger of the Minneapolis teachers plan. So therefore, benefit increases will not be affected going forward, in the sense that we have more liabilities to make up. We have additional assets to help make up those additional liabilities in the same ratio that the plan is right now. So, you know, from the State Board of Investments perspective, we really have two interests when it comes to the Minneapolis teachers' proposed merger. One is to make sure that the post is held harmless. And from what we see in the bill, the post is held harmless. And obviously, we're going to have to absorb the assets, so we'll have some logistics and some movement of assets and some additional management responsibilities. So, Madam Chair and members, as far as the Minneapolis teacher merger bill, from the State Board of Investments perspective, we think it's fine. As far as the 5% cap, the State Board of Investment has strongly supported this. We think it's good public policy. The current bill, which was formulated in the early 1990s, actually envisioned some problems. The original smoothing mechanism was supposed to be over 17 years. 17 years is the average time somebody participates in the post. Retirees' response was 17 seconds, and we had to negotiate to 5 years with the idea that we would come back and look at it at some other time. And we've been talking about this for a long time. All other attempts to do something to modify these increases and to smooth them out has not been successful. But the reality is we're not reducing benefits. What we're trying to do is equalize benefits. Because if you were a retiree in the 90s, you hit the jackpot. Yep. You're a retiree last year, you're not going to hit the jackpot. And if we had a smoothing mechanism, everybody from a public policy standpoint would have benefited about equally. And that's really basically what we're trying to do with the 5% cap, is to make it an equal benefit for all of those who will at some point during their career participate in the post-retirement fund, and not set up big winners and set up big losers.
So if I understand you correctly, the teachers who benefited from the great big increases will hold on to all those increases and be held harmless. And everybody else who is still in the system is going to pay more to keep this whole thing solvent.
Madam Chair, they're not going to pay more because of the post. That's not part of the equation. The benefit, the increases in contribution rates are to fund the benefit increase going from 1.7 to 1.9 in the formula for teachers. Okay, that has nothing to do with the post. The post is a self-funding mechanism. So the post is a standalone. And Madam Chair, I always have to be, and I always say this publicly, I'd be careful because my father-in-law is a retired teacher, and he retired 15 years ago, and he likes me. Because he's done very well. But the reality is, hope say someday I will retire, because I got 35 years in the state, and I'm not going to do as well as he did.
Mr. Bicker, you better keep managing that fund well.
So, no, there's nobody going to pay more for the post based upon any legislation that's in front of the committee today.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question has been answered.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Osmond, you pointed out a difference in the bill, and that is the cap. I just want to know your feelings on the cap, Representative Osmond. Are you opposed to the cap, and if so, why?
Representative
Osmond. Representative Biskins, I am in favor of moving this legislation to the committee. I'm not that familiar with exactly the details of the cap, as I explained to the chair. I've been trying to get myself better acquainted with that issue. I'm new to the Pension Commission. Personally, I don't have a long history on this particular activity, but I understand the need to make sure that the committee feels comfortable with the actions that you're taking and that we have good public policy to go forward. And we'll look for your judgment.
Representative Smith, do you wish to respond to that?
Madam Chair, I support all aspects of both bills.
Representative Biskins, was that your total question?
Well, it was, Madam Chair. Representative Osment has a well-respected history here in the legislature, and for me to become fully informed, if he had an opposition to the cap, I'd like to know what that is before I vote so that I have some comfort level. But I understand. I didn't mean to put him on the spot, and I'm sorry, Representative, if I did. But I understand your response quite well. Thank you.
And Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, and I hate to be playing devil's advocate. but again, Representative Smith and Representative Osmond and Representative Thiessen, when I look at the total numbers, right now, Minneapolis school teachers, there's 4,756 active school teachers. Presently, there are 4,981 retired. Anytime you take an amount like that in comparison, that's why Minneapolis school teacher retirement fund is as it is. When you look at the TRA, you have active teachers of 74,552. Retired, you only have 29,031. I'm still looking at, you know, it's still bringing a lot of retired teachers. There's more retired teachers apparently inactive than active teachers. And I mean, that if any time you take that large sum of retirees and put them into another portfolio, I still have to have an actuary explain to me how this works. Really, that we're still not going to have a downturn. It still doesn't make sense that we're putting enough money in, either on the state level or Minneapolis level, in order to get it whole. I just don't think we got enough money getting it whole. Just a concern when I look at the comparisons there, when you look at number of people you're dealing with.
Representative Newman. I'm sorry. Did somebody want to respond to that? Mr. Thompson.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not an actuary either. I'm an economist and a lawyer. Probably two strikes against me there. And if I was an actuary, I'd be striking out, I guess. The post fund, you know, as Howard explained, is separate. And we're merging it's like we're merging two post funds at the same funding ratio, and those folks will be held, I mean, they'll be no worse off and no better off after the merger. It's not an issue about whether you have 4,000 retired or 4,000 active. The issue is about the unfunded liability that currently exists in Minneapolis and having a funding plan to pay for it. So no matter if you have retirees or actives, that's not the issue. The issue is you need to fund a $970 million unfunded liability. We have a plan for that. We've identified the revenue streams to pay for it. And so the difference between pre-merger and after-merger is we've taken out a mortgage and we know where the money's coming from to pay for this over the next 30 years. Now, all we have to hope for is that Howard Becker earns 8.5% on the active and the post fund, but on the active fund, particularly for the merger. He has done better than that in the last 30 years, and so there is a risk. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen in the market. But the numbers we have presented here and the numbers that were on this sheet that really give you kind of the business plan or the proposal to pay for the unfunded liability are based upon actuarial numbers and based upon, you know, the experience of TRA and what we expect to happen in the future. If we earn the 8.5%, and I think I'm reasonably optimistic we will, in 30 years you will have paid off this unfunded liability and the state will be better off. TRA will be better off, and the taxpayers will be better off.
Just like buying a house, members. Representative Newman, last question, and then we're going to move on with an amendment.
Mr. Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, my understanding that the teacher's contribution under this plan is going to move up to 5.5% of the salary effective July of 2006. Currently, the Minneapolis school district is contributing at the rate of 4.5% and isn't going to go to 5.5% until 2007. As a follow-up question to Representative Heiderkin's concern, why is the Minneapolis school district lagging behind in terms of its contributions?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Newman.
Mr. Tease, Representative
to clarify, it's because in Minneapolis, in TRA, it's 5 and 5, 5% employer, 5% employee currently. In Minneapolis, it is 4.5% for the employer, 5.5% for the employee. That's just how current law is set up. And what we're doing is we're moving up the employee contributions this year, so everybody's going to be at 5.5%. We're not moving up the employer contributions till the following year. So all of TRA school districts will go from 5 to 5.5% in July 1st, 2007. Minneapolis will go from 4.5% to 5.5% on July 1st, 2007. Or are we moving them up to 5% earlier? Minneapolis. Are they going up to 5% this year and then another 0.5%?
The employer.
Mr. Thompson.
And the employer is taking place in two stages.
It is going up. Minneapolis is going up to 5% as of this year, and then we'll go up to extra 0.5% next year. So as of July 1st of this year, Minneapolis is going to actually have a 0.5% increase in its employer contribution to bring them up equal to all other TRA schools. Does that answer your question?
Part of it. No, okay. Chair.
Representative Newman.
My question is why is Minneapolis then lagging behind? Would it not be, or have you considered just going to the 5.5% right along with the teachers so that it's all equal? It seems to me like the Minneapolis district is gaining a break here in that they're currently at 4.5, then to 5, then to 5.5.
Just to clarify again, then, maybe to answer this question, Minneapolis is at 4.5 for the employer contribution. All other districts are currently at 5. And the reason for that is because your teachers in Minneapolis are actually paying 0.5% more than other districts. So Minneapolis is 4.5, 5.5%. All other districts are currently 5 and 5. So it's the same, it's 10%, but it's just divided differently. This year, Minneapolis is going up to 5% to match all other districts across the state in their employer contribution. And then next year, when the entire state goes up to 5.5%, Minneapolis will go with them. So I don't think there actually is a lag in Minneapolis. They're catching up this year, and then they'll proceed with everybody next year. And the reason we're waiting for next year is because of the funding, so the state funding can come in and it's a new biennium.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To this point, I'll start with Representative Thiessen, and we'll see where we go from there. So as of this year, Minneapolis and TRA districts are paying the same amount. Overall. Everybody's paying 10%. It's divided up differently in different places, but everybody's paying 10%. Under the Osmond bill were it to become law, Minneapolis would then be paying 10.5%, while TRA districts were paying 10%. And then next year, TRA districts also go up.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney.
Representative Thiessen.
Everybody will be at 10.5% as of July 1st because in all the other districts, the teacher contribution is going up as of this year. Minneapolis is already at 5.5% for their employee contribution.
One more question on this.
Representative Dabney.
When the pension offset was passed in, I want to say, 99, or was it 2001? I'm watching the wheels turn in Mr. Thompson's head. Wasn't there a pension offset to TRA districts that Minneapolis did not benefit from in the recent past?
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I've only been here 6 years, but what happened in 97 was that TRA became fully funded and lost, I think it was 2.14% of the tax. But in addition, you know, Minneapolis is already paying an additional 3.84% too. So that's in addition to what, you know, the 4.5% we're talking about in terms of the employer. So Minneapolis school district is already paying on the employer side substantially more than TRA.
Thank you. That's what I understood, and I'm amazed. I thought you'd been here forever.
All right. When we looked at this, we visited earlier today with both Representative Osment and Representative Smith, who agree that all these pieces should be put into one bill. Because the only way this is going forward is if all the pieces are together so that we have some comfort level that this will work. And so what I would like to propose is that we have an amendment, and I have the amendment, you have it in front of you. What the amendment will do is move the parts of Representative Smith's bill that you heard described into Representative Osmond's bill so that it can all go forward to the State Government Finance Committee together. And I think we should have some discussion on that. If necessary, if we can't finish that discussion today, we can obviously lay this over until next week. Representative Grilling.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think that's a very good idea. I don't know that that needs to take us so long, because to me this is just something we need to do, and I don't want to see that we have some pieces in one bill and some in another, and then we end up with some kind of problem that is ongoing. And then, as long as I have the microphone, if I may, Mr. Chair, I would just like to say to...
I'm Mrs. Chair.
What did I say?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. Madam Chair.
I'm giving you a bad time.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the Pension Commission who are here, I would like to request strongly that you work with St. Paul and Duluth to head off any kind of problem like we now have with the Minneapolis Teachers Fund. I was in purgatory on the Pension Commission in my early days on the in the legislature, and I just hated the problems with the Minneapolis Teacher Retirement Fund, and they were very resistant to ever even trying to do anything other than ask for money from the state, and here we are now. And I don't want to have to still be in the legislature or reading it about it, hopefully, in the newspaper, when we have the same problem with St. Paul that's heading down when they were better before, and even Duluth that was almost fully funded, 14 years ago, now is starting to have a little more problems, too. So I would beg those of you who have something to do about it to work with those other two outliers and get them in here. Yes, autonomy is nice, but then we all know that funds that run into trouble come running to the legislature, and then we have to do something about it because the teachers themselves have to have their pensions, and that's one of the few benefits financially that teachers get. But I don't like it when we have to contribute all the state money instead of maintaining, because then we don't have enough money for other things that we like to fund as well.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. At this point, I would like you to look at Amendment Number 5A, which probably was in the packet with the Osment bill. And what that will do is move the portions of the Smith bill that we need for this bill to go forward into the Osment bill. And since Mr. Smith's name or Representative Smith's name is already on the Osment bill, we're in great shape. Any discussion to this amendment? Any discussion? If not, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Are there any further questions or comments from the committee members for the gentlemen at the table who have been very kind to give us most of their afternoon today? Thank you, gentlemen. This is important that we get this done, and I'm very pleased that it can go forward. I will move then that House File 2847 be moved to State Government Finance as amended. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Definitely as amended, or it's going nowhere. All right. Representative Meslow.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I'm just going back to the 5A amendment for a moment because I'm looking for where the 5% cap is included in there.
That is in Section 1. Would you like to address that a little bit, Mr. Martin or Representative Smith?
Yes, members, I'm Larry Martin from the Pension Commission staff again. You look on page 3 of the Dash 5A amendment, specifically lines 3.20 to 3.22 is the 5% cap. The balance of the changes in Section 1 are related to a change that was made in who retains the actuary that had not been done, just effective cleanup.
Right. Representative Dorn?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just thought I would say quickly, just from my own comfort level as a retired teacher receiving a TRA pension, but also one that unfortunately fit the description that Mr. Vicker gave of I didn't retire 10 years ago. I'm one who retired last year. So, I don't believe that voting on this, for any reason, I would have to recuse myself. This would affect, in general. In fact, some would say that it's a cap that would change what I personally would have a shot at, along with a lot of my constituents. But I do think that it makes sense in the long run for all of us.
Thank you, Representative Dorn. And Ms. Alzwager has just asked to testify. Ms. Alleswager.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alleswager, Education Minnesota. First, I would like to thank Representative Osmond and Representative Smith for their hard work on the Pension Commission in trying to fix this issue with the Minneapolis pension deficit, as well as CRA for their proposal to come forward. As you probably are aware, there were some other proposals out there, and I really need to make this statement for the benefit of our members, and that is there was a proposal out there in terms of a concept, not bill language, that was a bailout of Minneapolis directly by CRA, and this is not that bill. And Education Minnesota strongly supports the provisions that Representative Smith and Representative Osmond have put together to fix the Minneapolis Pension Benefit Fund and, Minneapolis Pension Fund and to provide a benefit increase for the members of TRA. And just a couple of other brief comments. When you look at pension benefits, it's very important to look at the big picture. And I'm not going to get into all the specifics. I would like to talk to more of you individually later on. I understand the intentions of this committee. I understand this bill is going forward the way that it is. And on one part, I say thank you very much. On a little piece, we have concerns about the 5% cap. When you look at the formula multiplier increase, 1.7 to 1.9, I really want you to know that that does not even take many Minnesota teachers to the average pension benefit across the country when you look at Minnesota plans compared, the Minnesota plan compared to others. And when you put the 5% cap on it, you really do then, in the bigger picture, take them farther below average than they were, even if you increase the formula multiplier. And I can give you some, I think what I will do is prepare some facts and figures, because I have heard over and over again about the big double-digit increases that the post, some of the retirees receive from the post fund. But you can't just look at 10 years and say that that is the way the earnings are going to be for the rest of their lives. If you look at the history, you don't even come close to getting to that. So rather than continuing on with a longer testimony, I want to say thank you for the work on the Minneapolis pension fix and the TRA benefit improvement, but we would like to continue our discussion with others as this bill moves forward about the 5% cap. I can assure you that you will be receiving a number of calls from some of our members because they will have serious concerns about it, and I want to be fair to you to make sure you understand that. Thank you.
So if I understand you correctly, Ms. Alleswager, even with the multiplier that you have added,
mm-hmm.
or that we have added, you don't feel that Minnesota teachers are given a decent retirement. Is that in the percentage that you're looking at, or are you looking at dollars? Because I tell you, I've talked to many teachers in my district who feel like they're getting a great retirement and are thoroughly enjoying their retirement because of that.
Madam Chair, you bring up an excellent point. I think the teachers that you're probably talking to are those that have benefited from the high earnings that we all benefited from in the stock market a few number of years ago. Just to give you an example, this was shared with me from someone who understands more, better than I do, some of the historical benefits. And if you take a look before those years, in the early 90s when we saw that big increase, if you take those 4 years before when we the average earnings in the post fund was about 6.1%, if you took, this is complicated, so if you took that 6.1%, okay, 6.1% earnings, which is greater than the 5%, it took 10 years for those teachers to get just to the average of the other teachers. That you can compare Minnesota to. And you can compare them to 34 other states because we're coordinated with Social Security. In other words, my point is, we would ask you to look at the big picture. We encourage you to get this bill moving. We want this Minneapolis plan fixed. But in the future, I would like to have conversations with you and other House members about the bigger picture in terms of pension benefits. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alleswager. All right, I believe that brings us to voting on passage of the bill to the Government Finance Committee, State Government Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Bill is passed, and we'll move on. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hold on. This meeting is not adjourned. Hold on. Thank you. Some of you may not be aware that we appointed an early childhood working group. It will include representatives Meslow, Slawick, and Ruth, coming from Jobs and Economic Development Committee, Representative Meslow, Dorn, Demmer, Dabney, Klinzing, and Johnson from this committee. It is an informal working group. And they will meet next Monday morning at 10:30, and that room is not yet determined. All right? Monday morning. That means, you know, other people are welcome, but those are the members of the working group. Any other questions? Oh, the minutes. Where are the minutes? Look at your minutes, please, quickly. Minutes from, we have minutes here from Thursday, March 16th.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Biskins. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. Minutes from March 22nd, yesterday.
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right. Any additions or corrections to these minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Those minutes are adopted, and this meeting is adjourned, and we'll see you next Tuesday. Thank you.